Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andy Shea. Andy, another week. How are we doing, sir?
Doing good, Jimmy. How are you, sir?
I am good. I got out golfing this week when you were getting rain down in Harrisburg.
Cheers.
We ended up with beautiful weather. The rain system stayed below us, and I didn't play too badly. So that's a good week already.
Boom. Let's talk some football. Why not? It's almost June. Why don't we talk football? It's certainly football season.
I saw an article somewhere that marked it was 100 days to opening day for Penn State. So the countdown begins. Before you know it, they'll get back on campus. They'll be doing summer workouts, getting ready for the season. But what we had this week, Andy, is one of the milestones of summer is they start to announce game times.
Yep.
Which is always interesting, especially for Penn State fans. And I tell you what, they tease you. Like early on, you get some games, like the Northwestern game is going to be on Friday, which means it's Friday night. That one's going to be a night game. Okay, we get that. Fox is covering it. But they tease us with the early September games, the out-of-conference games. So that announcement came out, and the opener against Marshall is going to be at 3:30. And, Andy, I think the late afternoon games, that's kind of my favorite time for a Penn State game, home game, because it gives plenty of time for tailgating. The game then, starting at 3:30, gets done at a fairly reasonable time. As someone who then has a long drive home, that's much better than a night game for that return drive. So opener at 3:30, I like that. At Temple in Philadelphia, I think there was some thought this might be a late afternoon game. It turns out, no, that's going to be a noon game. If I choose to drive down to Philadelphia, means I got to get down there early. For a noon start. And then home game against Buffalo is also going to be a noon game. Your thoughts on any of that?
So I look at more where they are in terms of what network has scooped up particular games. Now, let's be honest, Penn State's first three-game schedule is just tragic, right? Like there's no interest, very little appeal other than new coach, blended family team, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of football product, there's no meat on this bone. So, yeah, the times are, but it's FS1, ESPN2, and Big Ten Network. I'm not so sure if Penn State, if Penn State was a top 10 team, they would, it might look a little bit different on where they land. You know what I mean? Like, which networks are on, you know, they're not a conversation team this year, Jimmy, right now, right? To start it out, they're not a conversation team. So plus the first three games, just awful football matchups. Let's just be honest. There isn't even a little like cherry on a cupcake here, Jimmy. There's sprinkles on your ice cream. There's Buffalo, Temple, Marshall, what this fits? This is where they should be in those first three games. I just don't think they're a conversation team this year. They haven't done anything, you know, to earn it. I think eventually they might wiggle their way into a conversation team, which means you're inside the top 15. Maybe. Much later in the season, we'll see how it goes. But to start out with this tragic schedule, yeah. All the games are going to be on television. This means you're a B team. This tells me that they're a B team.
Andy, Andy, I just can't understand your lack of interest in that Penn State Buffalo matchup. I just don't get it, Andy.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm joking there. You are completely right. At least a year ago, there was thought that was a team that was going to contend for a national championship.
Correct.
So early on, there was some interest in that team, despite the awful out-of-conference schedule. This year, yeah, the fact that there's Matt Campbell, new coach coming in, but I don't think anyone is knocking down the door to see Penn State Marshall matchup.
Even if they were a national title contender, that game, it wouldn't be in a premier time slot. It wouldn't be like noon on Fox, but at least somebody else of a higher stature would pick it up network wise because they want Penn State on.
All right, exactly. And like I said, I'm a little bit surprised that that opener against Marshall is at 3:30. Now it's on FS1, so which tells you it's not a high interest game. Right. I thought, like I said, if anything, there might be some interest in the team at Temple, but that's ESPN2 noon game. I think the only intrigue there at all, and I'm not even sure if it has much meaning, the fact that they're playing on an ESPN network, because right. Temple is the home team.
Correct.
ESPN covers their conference. So what I'm intrigued by, again, there's nothing here that is all that fascinating except for the logistics of the fans attending the game. Hey, the opener against Marshall, 3:30. Like I said, I kind of like that 3:30 kick at Beaver Stadium. I think the timing is good. Early in the season, good chance at nice weather, perfect tailgating weather, hopefully. So that's really it as far as interest goes. Now, nationally, though, and this is, Andy, I'm going to turn into Salty Jim for this, okay?
Go ahead.
I don't know if you saw this, but just I have a general issue with this. The Arkansas athletic director came out complaining because his team, they play a game, a Saturday night, West Coast night game. So it has like a 10 o'clock kickoff
which would be either Central or Eastern. It's like 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 10 o'clock on the East Coast.
Right.
7 o'clock, or is it 10 o'clock on the West Coast?
No. It's not 10 o'clock. On the West Coast, it's like 7 o'clock.
7:30, right.
Yeah. Here, it's like 10 o'clock. Body clock for them, but it's on a Saturday, and the following Saturday they play a game at noon. Okay. And the athletic director is all worked up about it because the student athletes won't get back from that West Coast game until like early the next morning, which reduces their recovery time from 7 days to six. I'm a little stunned he didn't point out that they would be losing study time, but we'll let that go. You've made a deal with the devil being the television networks. You're accepting right. those millions and maybe billions of dollars contracts, and you're upset by the scheduling being made. And it's not like, oh, they're playing Saturday late and coming back on a Thursday to play. No, they got Saturday to Saturday, and he's got a major complaint about it. Andy, you made the deal with the devil. You got to live with it.
So the inherent mistake here, Jimmy, he does have a bone to pick. That's a bit of a. Now, does the 3 hours say it's a 3:30 kick, right? What is his problem? Is it the 7 p.m. West Coast start? That's his problem. it's not that what's it's noon the next week. What's the difference if it's noon or 3:30, right? Like, does he still have a microphone? The thing, he has a little bit of a point, but here's the mistake. This is what you're going to use your megaphone on. If you can have a problem with it and be the athletic director, right? Don't go standing out in public with your megaphone and shouting and screaming about it. Shut up. Because you know why? Because you know why you're salty, Jim? Because you're a football fan, college football fan. And guess what? If you use your microphone for stuff people literally do not care about, wasted talent. That's just wasting the platform that you have. Because you know what? Actually, and I am a college football fan, I don't care either. I understand what his little complaint is behind the scenes, right? Keep it to yourself. Don't bring it out, because then you just made yourself look stupid. Because guess what? Everybody else is going to have a lot of other teams are doing the same darn thing.
Well, but you have even more egregious things. Like I said, if it was a Thursday kickoff after a Saturday game, I get it. That's a shortened week. But it's Saturday to Saturday. You're just playing late the first Saturday. And these are the same teams that in conferences that they are making their conference from coast to coast, bringing West Coast teams in. Now, this is actually an out-of-conference game. But to me, it just reminds me of the same. Ohio State fans are all up in arms. Because last year they played Texas, it was a noon game. This year they're playing at Texas, and it gets to be a night game. Ohio State, you complain year after year, you insist that you play Michigan at noon. You sign a contract with Fox that has their premier game at noon.
Noon.
Then you complain that your game is at noon. No, then give back the money, okay? You didn't complain when the contract was signed with Fox.
Penn State plays Wisconsin and then plays Northwestern 6 days later.
Correct.
If Pat Kraft came out and started complaining about it, you would have the same thing.
Yes,
when do
I
you
would.
Use your microphone? When do you use your microphone and what do you use it for? Arkansas AD, wasted talent.
Andy, that, my friend, is the final word. You're right. You're right. You're right, Andy. All right. When we come back, Andy, we're going to shift gears a bit. We're going to be talking about just where this whole college football world is going. We're going to do that after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number two of our show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. Andy pointed out to me we didn't hit on every last aspect of schedule talk. He's right. One of the things that was not presented with the with those games that we got their schedule, we were hoping to hear something about whiteout game. That is most likely going to be the USC game. I think that's October 10th, Andy. And we
it
didn't
will be.
Get,
it will be.
It has to be.
It
I
has
mean,
to be. Purdue. Yeah. And then you're into November, dude, when it's like, yeah, and Minnesota and Rutgers are your other two choices in November.
No.
Purdue at the end of October. Purdue? No. USC on October 10th.
And the only other argument could have been for Wisconsin, which is
homecoming.
Which is homecoming. So they're not going to do the whiteout with that. And correct. The one thing they. I love this too, Andy. They didn't name a time for the Wisconsin game. But they said it will be no later than 5 p.m., which I think is all part of the homecoming festivities issue. So everything points to USC. The fact is also, if it's going to be in a prime slot, not necessarily prime time, but a prime slot, meaning either Fox at noon, CBS late afternoon, or NBC at night. The thought is, of course, for whiteout, you want night game. That probably means NBC. And that particular week, Notre Dame is playing like late afternoon. So there won't be a conflict with NBC's contract with Notre Dame. So all evidence points to USC being the whiteout game, but it's not official yet.
I mean, it's not official, but you want your whiteout, which is one of the coolest, you know, things in college football, right? Like, it's something you hear players talk about, and it's such a landmark part of this program. You know what I mean? The whiteout now, it's sort of part of the fabric of the program. And you want at least a really good opponent. They've chosen like Minnesota and stuff in the past. This is USC, dude. Come on. It's the first time. Will this be the first time USC comes to Beaver Stadium?
First time in a long time. Two blue bloods, Penn State, USC. That's going to draw folks in, a lot of even casual fans. Yeah, that is.
NBC will want that game, Jimmy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. That's not even, a question.
Yeah.
But what it's about, though, is, you know, the same discussion point we had at the end of the first quarter, which is the deal with the devil. And if Fox has their choice and their decision, and for them, they admit that's the premier game that week, and they get the opportunity,
they're taking it.
They'll put it on at noon.
Yes, sir. And,
you know, I've been critical of the Big Ten in that. The Big Ten, Ohio State, and Michigan has always put their foot down. Ohio State, Michigan has to be at noon. It's at noon because that's what those schools want. Even when ESPN had the TV contract and would have wanted to put that on at night, they put their foot down and says it has to be at noon. Right. I don't understand why, as you said, a whiteout game is iconic. It's a big deal. Why can't they put their foot down and say that has to be at night? And again, I think it will be this year, but that's something that should be a given. And now it's to NBC's advantage that they have the Big Ten night slot for them to get. You know, it should be one of those things, Andy, where NBC becomes identified with the whiteout.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Jimmy, one bit. I don't mind the whiteout. I don't know why. I don't mind a whiteout game at 3:30, right? I still think but man, there is something about that whiteout game at night that just takes it. I loved your word, iconic, by the way. That just elevates it to another level. Everyone has their reasons for it. You could, you know, all day in the parking lots could be part of the equation, but they're, as a neutral, just watching it on TV. Now, obviously, I've been there for whiteouts, and it was a night game, spectacular. And I've been there for a day game. It was also spectacular. But from a watching standpoint, something about Penn State's whiteout game at night, it's just a little bit different and better for no reason that's completely tangible and is very subjective. But I just think it's one of the coolest things in college football is Penn State's night whiteout game.
Well, as someone who does typically attend those whiteout games, Andy, the fact that it's at night, I know you mentioned it's, could it be, okay, the fans are getting to party all day. That is part that is part of it, Andy. It is. But it's not just, oh, you know, you get to party, there's drinking all day
long. Right, right, right.
There's more to it than
There's more to it.
And as someone who has hosted tailgate events for these things, where we actually do events where fans from the opposing team will attend, okay? Which, by the way, just as a little note to Penn State fans, if you ever get an opportunity to tailgate with fans from the opposing team, it's the best, Andy. It's the absolute best. The conversations are better. You have more discussions. Fans are typically, we want to hear about your team, vice versa. It goes back. It's exceptional. But what you also find is, again, using that word iconic, this game for the visiting fans. So last year it was Oregon. I had a tailgate with so many Oregon fans around. Andy, it's the best. It's fantastic to hear these people. They are so thrilled to be there for this. The anticipation of it all day.
Right.
It builds up. Then you have the opening of the game. You mentioned you're okay if whiteout were a late afternoon game. Me too, for my just my own personal well-being, as I said, that long drive home. But when the game starts under the lights, okay, and that under the lights, everyone wearing white, it's different. You know, you go to other schools and they have their orange out, black out. Sorry, not the same. Not the same. And I just had a video pop up on my social media of the start of the Michigan game for a few years ago. When Michigan gets the opening kickoff and the first play from scrimmage, Andy, they can't get the play off.
Right.
They couldn't get the play off the first game, the first play from scrimmage. What does that tell you about the event itself?
Yeah, that it's just different. It's completely different than anything else. That's what it tells you, that even though they know what they're walking into, they still can't function inside it to start out. That's the difference.
I think it's a case they think they know what they're walking into.
Right. They prepare for it, but they don't really, there's nothing that can prepare you for it at that level. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And I know, Andy, you've been on the field for a lot of college football games where I've described it to people as if you're on the field, the noise, it surrounds you. Okay. It's more than just stereo. Okay. It just surrounds you and it's a different feel to it, the noise, and you elevate it to this whiteout standard. And the fans themselves, I give so much credit to Penn State fans. They are so aware that they are part of the game on a whiteout game. Right. They're completely aware of that and the effect that they have on the game, Andy. And that's the thing that I think makes it so special. The fans know they are part of the show and they have an effect on the game.
Yeah. And the way you talk about how the noise comes on you, it's, you have to get used to it. It washes over you and overwhelms you. It's loud, right? Like, you know, it's going to be loud. That's not the problem. It's that it washes over you to the point where it's not just loud. It is impacting you, and opposing teams have to get used to being impacted. It takes them time to adjust and get used to it. Literally overtaking and washing over you. So for you to be able to function there. So it's just different, Jimmy. It's just different. So that was a long chat.
Well, I think it's worthy of it because it's such an important event on the Penn State football schedule. And to their credit, they've made good use of it, Andy. They use it for recruiting. They use it as an identity for the university, and yep. it's become bigger.
It separates them from everybody else. Everybody else. Nobody else has. they try to replicate it, as you referenced just a couple minutes ago. But replication, and they're done pretty good. They're not this. And it's not because Penn State wasn't original doing this. It's because somehow Penn State's fan base and the culture of the way the program and the players, it turned into something completely different. It is one of a kind that is unique. And that's why you hear old players, when you see like clips on Big Ten Network, when they're asked about playing and stuff, you know, 8, 10, 15 years down the line now, they're like, oh man, Penn State whiteout. Oh man, Penn State whiteout. The whiteout at Penn State. You know, they reference it that way all the time. It is one of a kind unique. That is something that is very, very hard to find in a copycat world, and they have it.
They do, and Andy, you hear recruits when they make their commitment to Penn State. I was there for that whiteout game. I want to be part of it. We've talked to, during this offseason, several players who are transferring in, mostly from Iowa State, and they are aware. Oh, yeah, I've seen the whiteout game on TV. Yes, I can't wait to be part of it. All right, Andy, we didn't mean to get into the whiteout discussion, but that happens. When we come back, though, your questions, we ask Andy.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three, which means it's time for your questions, and you get to ask Andy. What could be better than that? You know, there's the Ask Andy button on the app. There's also now, if you go to the website, you click on, you know, one of these, one of our shows, there's also a place where you can put in your comments. Ask an Andy question there. So no excuse for not getting your questions in. Just like, who is it? Sam from Pittsburgh. I kind of like this question. I'm curious to get your reaction, Andy.
Okay.
Sam says, I saw an article that compares Rocco Beck to Sean Clifford. Is that a fair comparison? Now, just real quick, if you hadn't seen the article.
Yeah, I haven't.
The numbers, it compared Rocco Beck to all of the Penn State quarterbacks in the James Franklin era. Statistically, percentage of completions, QBR rating, those kind of thing. And it's fairly close, okay? But I particularly liked, the Rocco Beck to Sean Clifford. Sean Clifford was a Penn State quarterback for several years.
Yeah, Rocco Beck, very experienced.
Yes. So I think that experience part, and I think the fact that, you know, neither guy is going to overwhelm you with their big arm. Right. Neither one will be a top NFL draft pick. I know Sean Clifford got, you know, a cup of coffee or whatever. And I think neither one of them will overwhelm you with their athleticism. But that doesn't mean they can't, you know, carry the ball. The experience factor. Sam asks, is it a fair comparison?
Yeah. I think it is. I think they're superpowers. Their superpower is a little bit different. I think Sean Clifford was like a football player that played quarterback. Does that make sense? That was his superpower. Like, he was just, you know, he was like intense and sort of like, you know, and it's not, and I don't mean, sometimes this is a bad adjective to use, but he was a gamer, like sort of whatever the, you know what it takes, right? Like he had that sort of, you know, making chicken salad out of chicken, you know what ability, whatever it takes, right? Like he had that innate ability to make something out of nothing and make it happen. And, you know, I think Rocco Beck's superpower is a little bit different. I think he's a little more polished overall. You know what I mean? His spit and polish is a little better. I think Sean was compromised by injury. This is Rocco's first major injury, right? Overall, we don't know what he's going to look like post-injury, but overall, I think he's just got a little more spit and polish on him. But his superpower is he, while not having tremendous arm talent, he knows how to deliver the ball down the field, right? Like that's his superpower, is finding that 3 to 5 times a game where he's got the right matchup, the right defense, they've set everything up, and he hits it. Like he's really good at hitting down the field. And but I think Sean's superpower is different. But A to Z, I think they're very comparable. I don't think Rocco has sort of that innate grit that Sean Clifford brought to the table. I think Sean was miles ahead there. But I thought in the ability to make, you know, sort of splash plays or impact plays, whatever you want to call them, down the field, that's Rocco's superpower. So that's the little differences. But, yeah, no, that's a pretty darn good comparison. I like it. Good question, Sam. I like it a lot.
I do. I like the comparison. I probably like the comparison even a little more than you do, Andy. When you mention, you know, Sean Clifford on in the grit factor is, you know, well above Rocco Beck, I don't think that's fair to Rocco Beck. If you hear the talk from members of the Iowa State staff, multiple of them have brought up as an example, I think the UCF game for Iowa State. They were down a couple touchdowns. Rocco Beck threw multiple interceptions, one of them being a pick six. Well, at the end of the game, Iowa State makes the comeback. They win. They essentially put the game on his shoulders, and he got them that win. In fact, very late in the game-winning touchdown, they didn't take the ball out of Rocco Beck's hands. It was he ran in for the game-winning touchdown because that's what they wanted from him. And also, if you you and I were part of this show when we talked to Sean Clifford before he was even had reached state college, when he was still a high school kid, and the tremendous the asset that he had that we recognized even back then was his leadership skills. And Rocco Beck,
leaders, though.
Yes, they both showed that. I'm with you. I think it is a good comparison. All right, Andy, here we go. Jason from Arlington. We hear from Jason quite a bit. He says, how much do we need to fear James Franklin as a recruiter? Seemed like he's doing really well at Virginia Tech and will be attacking our typical recruiting areas. Andy, we saw that with the quarterback, Peter Bork, who chose Virginia Tech over Penn State.
Yep.
And I think James, he's a good recruiter.
He's a very good recruiter. Right now and through this class, through the 27 class, Matt's chasing the tail, right? He's chasing his own tail right now. He doesn't have a product to sell. He's way behind the eight ball. He had his 2026 class wrecked. All James did was transfer his model, the James Franklin model, to Virginia Tech. So, yeah, he's going to win, and I think he's going to win early and often, a lot. I think in 2 years, when we're looking at a recruiting class, you're going to start to see some scratchback. And I think over the course during the second half of this decade, in other words, I'm leading us up into, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, the blue blood that Penn State is will eventually stand on a level playing field with James and start reestablishing itself. Right now, because he's in the same area, and remember, James is very good, but James is very tied to his micromanaged process. He's going to do it like he knows it. That's how he's going to do it right now. He's going to win. And he's going to win early, and he's going to win often. And he's going to win a lot. But he's not going to win in the long run because it's Virginia Tech versus Penn State. But it's going to take a couple, 2-3 years for it to become Virginia Tech versus Penn State as we know it.
Well, I think also, Andy, James will have this, and I'm using the Peter Bork example, the quarterback, high-profile recruitment. Yep. I think James Franklin was going to do what it took to win. If it means overpaying, he will do that. He got himself a high-profile win, not only over Penn State, but over Georgia. That looks very good for him. But what you need to remember also is, as you pointed out, you know, many of these kids that maybe they're coming from Pennsylvania and committing to Virginia Tech, these were players that he had established a relationship with prior to this. The same thing is happening with Matt Campbell. His pipeline is some of these kids in the Midwest. We're seeing players from Minnesota, from South Dakota, from Iowa committing to Penn State. Why? That's Matt Campbell leveraging his pipeline. So,
good question.
Let me get to, you may not like this question nearly as much, and I could handle it if you like, but I've put it off for a while, for several weeks. John from Tyrone, my apologies for putting it off. I know you guys are mostly football, but have you seen the turnover in the basketball roster? This can't be the way to build a roster. Can Penn State hoops be saved? You want me to feel that one, Andy?
Yeah, because it just gets worse. It's awful. If there's a bottom 10 in men's college basketball, doesn't Penn State have to be there right now? So, yeah, go ahead, Jimmy. Have at it.
Everything you say is correct, John. It's concerning. Mike Rhodes, the coach, I'm a big fan of his. But the one thought with last year's team not playing very well was that they were very, very young.
That's and might nice. They not playing build, very well.
They were awful.
They were but awful.
If they brought the whole team back, it would be experience coming back. They would grow together.
Awful.
They all left.
It would still be awful. I don't know how you fix this. I don't know how you fix this, Jimmy. In this era of, you know, transfers and NIL, I don't know how you fix it.
Well, the question is, are you willing to invest in it? You know, I mentioned James Franklin at Virginia Tech may be overpaying to get the guy that he wants. That's the kind of thing you may have to look at. If you want to succeed in basketball, you may need to overspend. You may need to say, you know what, here's a good player. We can't afford to finish second. We got to spend the extra money to bring in a couple quality players.
First, you got to become mediocre, Jimmy. You got to get out of the cellar and get to the first floor before you can even start thinking about that. When you're in the cellar, I don't know how you fix it when it's this bad.
And candidly, you also, within basketball, there are teams that bring in, you know, the three-star recruit. They identify the talent. You know, it's kind of like the description of Matt Campbell at Iowa State and what he did with his three-star players and would develop them and turn them into NFL players. You know, at Penn State, you're not going to get the one-and-done players. You know, they come in, play 1 year, and become a first-round draft pick, like Duke does it, and Kentucky, and, you know, those kind of – and Kansas, and those kind of programs. But could you bring in guys who are solid basketball players and develop them? And that doesn't appear to be the model. The one thing Mike Rhodes is doing different with this year's team is he's bringing in more experienced players, not so much young players. I don't know if that's sustainable. All right, Andy, that's the note we're going to finish on, the negative basketball note. When we, I don't like it because I'm a big hoops fan. Don't like how it's working out at Penn State. We got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. Andy, we talked a lot. Schedule quarter one and two, a little more than we expected. We got to ask Andy in quarter three. Now I want to shift gears here. And it's kind of the general question and the stuff that we've hit on before. But I wanted to hit you up on the game has turned into, I have in my notes, and I sent you the notes, the game has turned into a semi-pro game. What was your answer to that, Andy?
Wrong. It's a professional game. The money's professional. The structure of the schools now organizationally resembles a professional team. The support staff resembles professional, type organizations. It might have been semi-pro before, Jimmy. It's not semi-pro anymore. No. It's professional all the way.
And Andy, I am just plain going to concede the point to you.
Yeah, it's
point that's, Andy.
That's yeah. Not up for debate, I don't think, sir. Sorry.
Yeah, when you have most of the players making, hundreds of thousands of dollars and you have players making millions of dollars, yeah, it's professional sports. It really is.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of people are very, very critical of it. Let me ask you the question.
Sure.
Because of that, is it really the game has gone downhill because of it?
I don't think so. I like parody. It depends on your, do you like chocolate or vanilla? I like the parody. Indiana won. Indiana won the national championship last year, went through the season undefeated. Who did they play in that game? Miami. When was the last time the U was that relevant? Early 90s? You know what I mean, Jimmy? Okay, in your first year, your college football playoff, Ohio State beat Notre Dame. Couple of blue bloods for sure. But, I took it a step further. I'm looking at the top, 10, 15 teams this year, right? Okay, at the top of the food chain, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, right? Georgia. That's the top of the food chain preseason. Take one step below that. Indiana, Miami, Texas A&M, BYU, Texas Tech, Ole Miss. You know what I mean? Like, look at the second tier that's right there knocking on the door. That's not your traditional college football playoff blue bloods. One of those is going to ascend and rise, and one of those top four, five that I mentioned among the Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, and Georgia, one of them's going to fall. That's just the way it always crumbles out that way. But I like the depth of it now more because I've always thought, in a 14 college football playoff, you're looking at four teams. I like rankings. I like the top 25. I like to look at the depth of it. I think it has relevancy, but in a four-team field, it didn't have any relevancy beyond the top six, right? That was it. You just kind of stopped there. When they would unveil the college football playoff rankings, that's all you cared about. Maybe six. Definitely five, but maybe six. It's different now. So I like the depth part of it. I think it's I don't feel it is a case of have and have nots. Who's missing from the conversation I'm having with myself, with you, and our Penn State fans? But I'm kind of having, who's missing? Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, Penn State. None of those are in that sort of window that we're talking about. So it's got more balance. It's more equal. Is it completely flipped? No. Is it trending that direction? Yes. I like it. I like it a lot. And I feel that a Texas A&M or an Ole Miss or a Texas Tech, I think Indiana has proven, and to a degree Miami, because Miami came from ashes to get where they were last year, not in one season, but over the course of a half decade, post-Manny Diaz. Let's call it post-Manny Diaz, when they clearly were, you know, in that 50 to 75 range. There's two or three of those type schools out there. I like to watch them rise up again. I enjoy the parody way, way more than I did the check the box, because you know which of these five or six teams is going to be the final four.
Andy, I agree with you, but I'm going to put maybe just a little different slant on it. When we were having a four-team playoff, we would debate if there were even four teams capable of winning the national championship. Usually there was three, fair and that point. Fourth team fair got point. Blown out. Fair and point. Now the timing, not that college thought this through, it was dumb luck, that when they went to this 12-team playoff, that they're actually now it is maybe even double-digit teams capable of winning the national championship. Miami was seeded 10th, okay, made it to the national championship game. Deservedly so.
Almost okay. didn't make it.
And almost right, didn't make it. Right.
They almost didn't make the field.
Almost didn't make the field, but and prove that they were worthy of playing in that national championship game. And I've always talked about the fact some of those teams you name, Miami is spending lots of money. Texas Tech is spending lots of money. Texas A&M spending lots of money. And that's partly how they're getting there, which is fine. It gives them a route to get there that they didn't previously have. But I also got, you know, this other theory that came out was at the time when you couldn't pay the players, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, they had the facilities, the reputation, all. They had a monopoly on the talent because of that. Now, they're still getting, you know, the 1A player because they're still Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia, and they could afford to bring in those guys. But I think they're losing out on 1B, okay? Those guys who are really good, maybe not great, not the guaranteed players. They used to always get those guys. Now, that next tier, the second tier of team, could go spread to that out. Same player, will pay you more than Ohio, because Ohio State's paying all the five-star guys. The next guy round, the next level of team could pay them as their top guy pay-wise, and that distributes the talent a bit.
It levels the playing field. When you what in your model, those schools were getting most of the A's spread among them, the best of the B's, and what they all evaluated as the best of the C's. Everybody else was getting what was left, correct. Right? They were, okay, what's left of the B's that they didn't gobble up? I still think they're getting some A's more than most, but I think everybody else is grabbing an A or two here and there that they wouldn't have been able to grab before. It's the B and C pool that that is bringing the parity and to a more level playing field. I don't think the old school halves are getting as much of it. They're getting some of it, but not as much. And it's being spread out. And I do believe that the development in the transfer portal of players coming up from lower level schools is spread out all across the country. That is everybody doing their own individual talent evaluation. To me, that is the hidden key.
Well, and I'll add to that. I agree with you, Andy, with that talent distribution in the portal. But what you also have, and I'll use Ohio State as an example again, Kyle McCord, very highly rated quarterback, but they bring in three highly rated quarterbacks.
Right.
Kyle McCord ends up at Syracuse and having a big season for Syracuse. Give you another example, Andy, closer to home. James Peoples, very highly regarded running back, going to Ohio State.
Yep.
But they have a whole room full of those guys.
Correct.
Somebody's going to end up not playing as much. Guess what? He comes to Penn State, he's going to have an opportunity to be the alpha running back.
Yeah, it's that's what I think. That part of the playing field is where individual staffs and programs get to choose the most impactful player. They're picking their kind of guys, right? And they get to, there's so many schools for them to choose from and so many players to look at that it just makes it a level playing field across the country. Did you find the, not necessarily quote unquote the best guys, but the right guys? Kurt Cignetti's the best at it. That end of story, right? Stop there, right? He picked Penn State's corner, right? He only brought in, 15 guys this year, right? Like something like that, 12 to 15. Not as much as everybody else, per se. He's picking those guys that he actually wants. Penn State talent at corner was one of them. And I agree. That guy's an NFL player. It's not necessarily, quote-unquote, all the best ones out there. Everyone can identify the best. Which ones are the right ones that are going to be those impactful players? Kurt's the best at it. Kurt's the best by a mile.
Well, you hit another skill set that is so important, which is that scouting of players, especially in the transfer portal.
Yep.
I mentioned, you know, the quarterback position at Indiana. For a third straight year, he's bringing in a transfer quarterback to play 1 year there. He's hit on his first two, but a year ago, who was going crazy about bringing in Fernando Mendoza to their program other than Correct. Indiana?
Correct.
And he's a Heisman Trophy winner and the number one pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, it's the combination of that and the ability to evaluate your roster correctly and have the assets to do it's roster retention, which players are the best ones to keep. And you know, you don't keep everybody. You can't keep everybody. But which are the right ones and which are the ones in the transfer portal that you really, really need and want and can land? So I think those two elements of this whole new world of college football have way more sort of value and undertones than just simply the money and how much you spend on recruits and high profile guys. Peel that away, look under the surface, and that's where you see big progress in winning being done.
All right, Andy, that is it. That's the final point, and it's a good one. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.